Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gents. So, I have actor and filmmaker Choice Skinner is on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate it.
Okay, and thank you ever so much for doing this. Just looking forward to, again, just meeting a lot of just cool, current creative talents. You're from Brooklyn, New York, and you're part of the New York acting scene there?
Okay. Oh, well, I wouldn't say the New York acting scene, more of the New York martial arts scene.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, that's where I got my bumps and bruises. My first instructor was Dyron Jackson. He came out of the Shotokan system and mostly got into a lot of the open ways of training martial arts. He was very much into cross training. He had a very big Jeet Kune Do mindset. So a lot of what I learned, kickboxing and Wing Chun, stuff like that, came from him in the beginning. And then when I moved to Georgia, that's when I got a bigger foundation in my martial arts
career. Okay.
but I was doing music in New York. That's really where I got into the entertainment, the music aspect. So I was going to school, I was working a gig at the bodega, and then learning martial arts to defend myself, because I grew up in the neighborhood right down the street from Mike Tyson. And so I had to learn that, and then I was doing music as my entertainment outlet.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. So you're doing both simultaneously. Would you recommend that to most people? It seems like they'll often just do one thing at a time, and they basically got to try, you know, a dozen different things that they're good at simultaneously.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking, when you get into the martial arts, you start to learn that if you let the martial arts revolve around you and your life revolve around the martial arts, there's nothing you can't accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for things to give me the outlet, because growing up in New York, it was a lot of things in regards to bad influences. And so my mom was really good at introducing me to films and television shows and movies. She was very good at keeping me occupied and in the house by watching movies. And so when I did have time to watch movies and stuff, I was home, but I was influenced by positive things. So the martial arts, music and stuff. So to answer your question, if you can take it all in, take it all in. I don't believe in anyone having anything that can hold them back from being the greatest of who they are. But I know some people have to focus just on one thing. I remember one of my Wing Chun instructors would look at me and say, "How do you do all of this?" He said, "I have to just focus on Wing Chun." And he was brilliant at Wing Chun. but he was like, you do Kali, you do Jeet Kune Do, you do, you know, all this stuff. He's like, I don't know how you were able to do that. And I said, that just came from just being influenced a lot by a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like everyone's quick to pigeonhole or typecast everyone, and it's like, and then they'll complain, "Oh, so-and-so, you know, they can only play this kind of role." It's like, well, it depends on what's available to them or how they challenge
themselves. Yeah, well, when I teach actors and I work with actors, I have been one to tell an actor, "This role isn't right for you," whether or not they decide in themselves that they really, really want to play it. I'm not one to kill anybody's dream or desires or passions. But you have to be real. I mean,
right?
Everyone wants to be a character actor actor. Do you understand what I mean by that? It's, yes. If you ask most people what defines an A-list actor, they believe it's the character actors, but that's not true. It's the A-list actors playing the character actors. And so you're more brave and you're more honest if you look at a role and say, this role isn't right for me, but I know another actor who it is right for. When you get to a higher level in the acting game, it becomes a thing of, why am I doing this? You have some actors who are chasing it to get awards. I think Will Smith has been taking certain roles. Maybe he'll get it this year, who knows? But he's been taking certain awards to get that Oscar. For some people, they want that Oscar. And then you have someone like Gary Oldman who got an Oscar by being who he is, which is an A-list actor who does character actors. He's brilliant at it. And so not to confuse people, because a lot of times people would think, well, that's the acting if I'm playing all these different characters. I mean, the greats got to a point where they were playing themselves in the character.
Totally. Yeah, it does kind of get to where everyone just seems to think, you know, everyone has control over where their career goes, and it's like, or what kind of roles you want to play versus what you actually want to play. It's like, there's just so many layers to it. And yeah, it's definitely does seem like there's a lot of A-listers just still in a way what was basically going to character actors years ago, to where it's like, can everyone just stay in their corner? You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you look, take Brad Pitt, for instance, when we first saw him on film, he was in True Romance. He was playing a stoner on a couch. And then he was in Thelma and Louise. He was the sexy guy in the shower with the long hair. And then he played all those roles for several years where you just saw him in his eight-pack. It was just like he's ripped. He looks amazing. And then he started, I think when Snatch came along, people started seeing this guy can really act. He did the accent. He had a funny streak about him that people didn't know. And so now, as the older Brad Pitt, you see him playing roles where he does anything he wants. If it's comedy, it's comedy. If he wants to play Benjamin Buttons, he's got the makeup on. But he had to become an A-list to have that power to play any role he wanted to play.
Totally. I couldn't concur more. And it's, I mean, part of the fun of acting is seeing the transformation and everything. When you even look at your career, you've had some pretty big A-list gigs and some low budget and web series gigs. Getting any of those gigs, would you say it was just more work was put into the audition versus getting the role, or was more work put into the role? Because, you know, it's a tough thing to balance out. There's a lot of roles that people struggle to get.
Yeah, and that's a very, very great question. Never been asked that before, but I can play off it in the sense of understanding. For me, for my career, a lot of the great stuff that I got was given to me because people knew of my work. Mm-hmm. I was blessed. I'm not an auditioning actor, but I do audition. So it's like once I got to that realization that, hey, you know what? Auditioning isn't for you. But I do audition because my manager, she sends me out, and I will book. I have booked through auditions. But a lot of the great stuff that I've gotten was people who saw me work, whether I was on stage or whether I was referred to them by someone, and they said, you have to meet Choice. He's an amazing actor. So I was blessed to have that, my name presents itself before I walk through the room type of situation.
Oh, sweet. Because
really, really what they want is for you to just show up and be there. 99% of it is showing up. The audition, show up. I've gotten auditions where people went out of town and they went with me as the second or the third choice. Mm-hmm. I was always one when I lived in LA. I hardly ever went home for the holidays because that's when you would get most of your bookings. Everyone else is going home. Yeah, they have a 2-week airplane ticket, or they got a month plan. And all of the work doesn't stop until literally 3 days before the holidays. So several times I got great, great, great gigs because I didn't go home and I stayed. So for me, sometimes it's a thing of working on the audition Once I book it, or if I've already booked it, then okay, now the work begins. Now I want to, if it's a character, I want to put this character through the ringer. Or if it's having, I've gotten auditions where it was like, this is perfect for me. This is perfect. And it's 5 pages and I knock out the pages over the weekend. It's 3 different scenes. Go in, audition for it, and then don't get the role. And realize that, okay, they already had the person booked. And it was Andre 3000, or it was this person or that person. And that hurts because it was like, okay, this is the one time that I really, really connected with this role and I did the best that I could and it went to someone else. Whereas the stuff that I've gotten, like lead roles and stuff, were just people calling me up, hey, we got this great part for you, it pays this much, it shoots this many days, are you interested?
Something.
Those are the blessings. I like those because, like I said, I'm not an auditioning actor. I believe that if you get to know an actor well enough, you know what they're capable of, honestly. And if you're talking about pigeonholing or typecasting, I don't mind playing thug roles. I love them. I grew up around a lot of thugs, and I believe in humanizing any character that I work on. So I don't have a problem with it. I just think you have to be more pragmatic about your career in regards to what you should do compared to what you want to do. Everybody wants to play Shakespeare in the big films, but they're not going to get it made with low-level names. They're going to get made with Denzel Washington. They're going, you know what I mean? I mean, they're going to get it made with people of that caliber. And so play what you're able to play and make a check, because that's important as well, because that helps you keep moving forward.
I'm so glad you say that. I really get tired when I hear people say, you know, oh, well, I did it for this, for, you know, the creative versus the money. It's like, well, you're going to get money anyway. So, you know, and you're not, you know, at the end of the day, you're also a businessman. You're having to sell your product that you're featured in, you know?
Yeah, you are your product. And that's the hardest part of this industry, because a lot of us weren't groomed in family life like that, or in our communities. And you go out to LA and you're dealing with these big sharks who wear $3,000 suits, and you're sitting across from them and you're not asking the most important question: for your time, how much are you getting paid? What they're paying actors now, it used to be when you got a guest star role, it was great, or even a co-star role. Now the guest star roles are co-star roles, the co-star roles are under $5,000. And so you're getting paid less and less and less and less. Distribution of films is a struggle. It doesn't matter how great the film is, or how much money you spent on it. There's a lot of struggles in making money in the film industry now that people aren't really talking about, because they don't really see where the future of it is. And that's the scary part.
I concur with that. And I'm glad you confirmed it more, because it does, you know, even people will complain even how a show looks like it's shot very extremely fast. And truth be told, it often is, you know, it's a quick shoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
3-5 takes. That's it. And
Tyler Perry does 1 or 2. A lot of my actors that I work with, and I was very big on that when I had my acting studio. I said, you can't wait to warm up. You have to be ready at all times. It's like the martial arts. You can't get punched in the face and think, oh, okay, I'm ready to go.
Right.
All time. And Tyler is very big on moving fast. It's 1 or 2 takes. And a lot of people got shell-shocked when they got on his set. And he's very particular on what he wants. And so it's funny, you said it best, man. It's funny to listen to people talk about what they feel they want to do and how they're going to do it. And I realized that's why I got into creating my own content, because there are things that I just won't do. And we're not going to elaborate on that. But at the same time, I love what I do. And I feel like the only way to continue to do it is to make money by doing it and having control.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I was even an extra on one film set, and there was this one guy who had gone from being an extra to like a production assistant, and he was pretty much treating all the extras, I won't name the thing, like garbage. And it was one of those, is like, okay, I get who we are, but
why are you doing this? You know what caused that? I in the 11 years that I coached actors, I figured out what causes it, what causes people to treat people a certain way, especially when it comes to actors who are the leading actors, above the line actors, and people who have important positions. First off, a lot of people have idios. They come on set, you know, with things that they have in themselves that they're dealing with. You could remind them of a brother, a sister, a cousin, an uncle, somebody that broke their heart in high school. And people do that. They kind of relate you to someone that they know. Mm-hmm. And then the main thing is pressure, because film sets have a tremendous amount of pressure. No one wants to get it wrong. No one wants to be the one with the egg on their face. And so you're talking about a set of 120 people. That's 120 different personalities you're dealing with.
Totally.
And you don't know what happened to that person on the way to the set last night, the day before, when they were on set. We don't know if they got family issues, because these are things you're not supposed to bring to work, but people still have it underneath.
Right? It's insane. I'm glad you brought that up. Do you think more and more people are still getting sleep deprived, even though they're trying to wrap a lot of these productions quicker now?
Yeah, because the faster you work, the less likely people have time to themselves. I was always the actor. When I'm on set as an actor, I'm an actor. I don't have directing thought processes. There are things that I'll see that I can ignite in myself and say, man, if I was doing this, I'd knock this and this out. So what happens is you have people who come from commercials, people who come from theater, people who come from television, and then people who come from film. And they're all acting based. They're all the acting medium, but they're different mediums, and they all move at different pacings. I've coached actors who work on soap operas. People always talk down about soap operas, but I believe soap operas are great because they move really fast. They move really, really fast. And so then when it comes to the pacing, you're dealing with the pacing of the director, the AD, and the PAs. And if they're all, usually everyone that works on one show goes to another show with each other. So it's like the producer will get the director will get the AD and the PAs and the gaffer. So those people, if they're used to moving a certain way, will move at that pace on that show, whether it's indie, whether it's, because DPs go from project to project. They're not like directors. Some directors will do television for a period of time or do features for a period of time. Very few will go and do theater. Some of them will do a commercial, or they come out of music videos. So that's what you're dealing with. And that's right. Why you're going to get different types of attitudes on certain sets, even if the set is a $200 million set.
Totally. It doesn't get any trickier than that, does it?
No. But I've always been the type of director where, because I'm an actor and I've dealt with all types of directors, I've dealt with the directors who are so easygoing, and then some directors that will look right through you in that moment, and they don't need you until they need you. And then some directors who are friendly and fun, and then some who are strict assholes, and they want exactly what they want. And then some who are fresh and new, and they're being sabotaged by the DP or the AD, and they don't know.
Man.
That's horrible. Because that falls usually on the actor. And the actor, depending on who they are, I'm a little different because I'm a city kid, so I'm going to be a little bit more upfront about things. I had one situation where I was doing a spec commercial, and it was the director's first job, but the DP had experience. And so every time the director would come and do something, he'd walk off, the DP would come and move it this way or that way.
Oh, God.
And so the director would go back to the monitor and come back and be like, what did I tell you to do? I told you to do this. And so it happened once. And then I looked around and I realized that no one's going to come to my rescue. They all knew what was going on, all of the crew. And I said, nobody going to say nothing. So the second time he came, he was ready to yell at me. I said, hold on, before you yell, let me tell you something. Every time you walk off, your DP does this. And you come back, you think I did it. I'm going to tell you, I didn't do it. And so he looked and everybody looked, and it became a better set because of that truth. It, had I not said nothing, he'd have thought I was the worst actor on the planet. So that's a tidbit to anybody that's listening on what to do in that type of situation. Shame right. the devil. Shame the devil. Shame him.
Well, and we've seen many get to the top and do the whole, I can't work with so-and-so. It's like, did you even tell them what you didn't like?
Absolutely.
And they seem to not get the whole, you know, the difference whole between asking what you need versus telling, I was even telling some amateurs I was working with one time, is like, you don't tell actors how to act. And you're like, I don't agree with that. I'm like, you're so not listening to what I'm saying. It's like an unwritten rule.
Right.
And it, to me, they thought, oh, you're directing the actor. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. Make a request and you see what you can get. And
Yeah, because they're all trained in different schools of thought. So you got people who train with Howard Fine, you have people who trained at Yale, you have people who trained with Tasha Smith or Ivana Chubbuck. And I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. All the top acting coaches in LA all have a special way of coaching and a special way for you to do the work. So thereby, when you get on set, everyone has a different approach. And so now you have to deal with those different approaches. If the person says, okay, I need 2 minutes before I can do this, or I need a fifth of a Bacardi in order to get loose. And that, there goes the turmoil. The turmoil and the toxicity starts with that. Teacher stay, student do. And so what happens is that I was very big on telling actors, listen, do what the director says. You're an actor, report the emotions. It's not your job to story write. It's not your job to block anything. You can always offer suggestions, but you have to know the type of director you're dealing with. Me, I'm a breeze. If someone says, hey, can I do this? Absolutely. You know why? Because I'm an actor. It's kind of like Ron Howard. He's an amazing director because he was an actor for so many years. A lot of directors never acted or they never wrote. And so they don't know that process. All they know is their shots. All they know is what they want their color scheme to be. They work great with their art department. They work amazing with their DP, but they don't know how to work with actors.
No.
And so as an actor, listen, when the film fails, it doesn't fall on the face of the actors. It falls on the face of the director. That's what people don't understand. People will look at actors and say, why were you in that horrible film? But they're going to blame the director because people always say, who directed this? Even if the actor did a poor job and the director had trouble communicating with the actor, we don't know that. Just recently, what was the actor's name? He just came out about Jessica Alba, and he said working with her was miserable. And it's like, we would have never known that. We don't know that until years later. But the show is a success, and people are very good at acting in those interviews. Oh, yeah, I read the script, and then I met with Jessica, and she was amazing. But then you understand why there was times when she wasn't getting a lot of work anymore. You see, you start put two and two together. You say, oh, okay. So, yeah, no one knows the full story until they're told.
Oh, totally. And it also just seems like everyone just – some of them evolve quickly, and others take quite a while to evolve. And I've definitely seen some actors, they started out, they were best known for a lot of movies that weren't very good, but they were thought of as being good, and vice versa. They did pretty bad and otherwise good movies. So yeah, it's definitely a team effort. You hear about the terror stories about producers and investors taking over the sets to where basically everybody looks bad.
Yeah, but you know, it is a necessary evil sometimes. Because I've seen directors, young directors, they may have come out of the music video realm, or they did indie films the way they wanted to do it. And a lot of times when those films are avant-garde, now they're involved in ITs and corporate structure of how things have to be made. And they fight against it. That story of Trance, you know, he fought against it. And they act out because they're very... You can get someone who's very artistic, but are they going to be able to fit into the round hole if they're square?
Totally.
And so it goes both ways. I mean, I've seen directors on set never call cut.
Oh, really?
I don't call action a cut. That's stupid. It's like there's a reason why it's been done all these years.
Let people know it's over.
Oh, man. Yeah. Get right up out the chair in Video Village and walk away. And they were like, was the actor wasn't looking at the camera? The AD, oh, cut? You know, it's crazy. It's crazy to watch.
That's a mouthful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I take it you've seen that documentary, that guy who was in that thing.
The guy that was in that thing.
Yeah, it interviewed a bunch of character actors, and they had one cool section that was dedicated to what do you do in between the gigs, you know, in between phone calls and auditions and showing up.
Oh, okay, yeah. So
did you have a method to that?
Yeah, listen. Success is something that is guaranteed if you keep doing it. Right. That's one thing that I've learned. I've seen people, when I started out, come out to L.A. with just the clothes on their back, and they were sleeping on someone's couch.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
A year or two later, their whole life changed. And they didn't have a car, and then they have a Mercedes. And you see them, or you go to the auditions. I'm not going to mention the actor's name, but I used to audition against a specific actor. We were at all the same auditions. And wow. That actor would wear the same velour sweatsuit at every audition. And nice guy, very, very big heart. And it doesn't surprise me he's gotten as far as he's gotten. He's an Oscar winner. Oh, but at the same time, it's funny to see that persistence is what pays. You have to keep going. And that's my answer to the well over 2,000, 3,000 people that I know who've been in the industry since I started. There are people who slept on my floor, I'm not going to mention names, for 3.5 years. Oh, and now they're on 2 TV shows, writing for one, living in a house, 2 stories, and pulling in, you know, 6 over 7 figures a year, living a great life. Walk by that person, they'll act like they don't know you. This is just part of the process. And right. You learn a lot.
I don't know you. Yeah. Thanks for everything. By the way, I don't know you.
Yeah. It's insane. But we all have a different story. But what I can say, it's part of the reason why I create my own content, because I'm a creative person. If I don't feel like I'm creating something, I'll die. The spirit dies. Thereby, I've been training martial arts this month for 32, 33 years. How many years? 34.
That's sweet. And you said before the interview that Art Camacho was also one of your teachers. And I see that you even got, you know, some stunt doubling expertise, but really the main thing, what made you decide, hey, I'm going to take on a fan film with a giant budget of Black Lightning?
Stupidity.
There you go.
Stupidity, ignorance, and passion. A lot of passion. I wanted to play. Listen, there's a lot of people, I'm not dashing anybody's hopes or dreams, but to become part of the Marvel or DC universe, it's a lot. To think that someone's going to say, hey, you're going to be this superhero, that superhero, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. For whatever way they get in and they do it, I'm not knocking anybody because I know things. But at the same time, I was like, listen, I'm not going to wait for Marvel or DC to give me a shot to play a superhero. I'm already a superhero. I want to play a superhero. So James Lynn Black is one of the closest, dearest people in my heart. He's an amazing person.
He is a cool guy.
Oh, man. I've
seen him in a few shows.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He came to me and he said, what are we going to do? Because we had just finished working on my second feature that's still in post. That one of these days I will finish. But he said, what are we going to do? What's next? And I said, man, I want to do a superhero. I want to do a superhero. And he said, okay, well, let's find one and let's do it. So we found Black Lightning, and I said, listen, if I'm going to be Black Lightning, you're going to have to be Static. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And so we wrote the script. We finished it in about 2 months. It was supposed to initially been five minutes short. It ended up being almost 30 minutes short. And we didn't know how we were going to do it, but I had a full acting class. and we decided we were going to pull it out of our pockets. Now, at that time, the CW didn't even, their Black Lightning didn't even exist. It was 2 years before CW even decided that they were going to start a show. Wow. Yeah, we went into production. We were shooting as time went by. And then once we finished, Black Lightning was going into production. And we were like, so we got to finish all these VFX. It took us 2 years to finish the VFX. If I didn't have James in Black, it wouldn't happen because he's so tremendously talented. He sat at, and I told him, I said, you want to help do the VFX? He was like, well, I've never done it. I went to school for Photoshop, stuff like that. But he did a phenomenal job. Still to this day, those effects stand up better than some of the big post houses. And so the stupidity was, okay, thinking that we could do, because I always raise a bar, and I'm a firm believer of anything that you do, do it 100% and take it to the next level. But there's a lot of work that goes into that. And that's where the stupidity comes in, because it's like, you know, you didn't know that that was going to happen. All you figured was that it could be done, because I'm a person where it can be done. Don't tell me no. Anybody yeah. who's ever worked with me on a set will tell you that. Choice did not believe in no. And we will find a way to get it done. So the passion took over, because once you get in, I'm a person where it's got to be finished. So that was part of it. We finished, we made it a two-part, whereas it originally was a film on its own. We made it a two-part just to get it out before Black Lightning got out on its premiere. And we got it out in time. So we didn't want people to say that we got our idea from Black Lightning, because when you look at our short, it's based on the comic. It's not based on the TV show. So we get a lot of comments from people like, this is stupid. We're the daughters. Blah, 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 blah. This is not Tobias. And it's like, no, no, we based it on the DC comic.
So many fanboys. You have to always say, okay, what do you know this from? Okay, this isn't at all like that. You're talking about the popular recent iteration of it.
Absolutely, yeah. And we based ours on the 52 universe.
Do you know Lucifer or Batman from the comics? No, right. You know it from the most recent movie, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And in their movie, Batman goes to jail and he loses his fortune and all that stuff. So yeah, they change it up a lot. And mostly nowadays, a lot of these storylines are changed up, and these characters in particular are changed up for political reasons and or pandering and stuff like that. And it's sad to watch, because if you play those characters as they are, they're very powerful characters. I to this day, I still get people say, man, your Black Lightning character was amazing. He was better than the CW character. And I agree, because it's like there were things that I wouldn't allow. I'm like, okay, he's got to be, you know, in the DC universe, he's considered one of the most powerful characters. He's powerful, tremendously powerful. And on the show, they stunted him. You know, and they castrated him pretty much. But that's the story they decided to tell. So when I tell stories, I'm a little bit more real to the character. And I knew I wanted to do that. Same thing with James. He wanted Static to be real to the character. So people always say, well, how come they didn't hit you guys up to do it? And it's like, well, who knows? Who knows? I think when you set a bar, sometimes they're fearful that you're going to be a lot more difficult to do the things that they want you to do.
If you ask a few too many questions, they're like, oh, he's going to be difficult. He's going to ask us questions. How dare
they? Sure. Sure. I mean, that's the love-hate essence of the relationship of with Hollywood. I mean, that's kind of why I'm an independent filmmaker. I don't have to go through 20 people to get an answer about one thing. I could just do it.
That's a good way of putting it. And
that's why I did the superhero character. That's why I wanted to do a superhero character, and I did it, Black Lightning. It took a lot out of me. It did. And then I said, oh, I'm not going to do that no more. And here I was. I went right into another feature film with no money and resources, where I had to teach everybody to do everything, still waiting on getting the distribution for it. It's tough, man.
Are we allowed to say, is that the film Keep the Faith?
No, Keep the Faith. I'm still finishing that one up. I skipped that one and went to A New Life, because when I was doing Keep the Faith,
I ran crowdfunded.
It was crowdfunded, and we didn't have enough money to finish the VFX. At that time, VFX was something totally different. And it shows you how fast VFX moves in the world. Now, the things that we couldn't do, we can do. And at that time, it was budgeted at $30,000 just to finish it. Oh, and damn. So we had a screening, and we had people there who they were clamoring to be a part of it, but then you would get those calls, well, he's not going to be able to give me the 30 grand. He just bought a horse. stuff like that. And it was just like, it was very disheartening. So that's kind of why we moved into doing Black Lightning, because we figured, listen, if we can do Black Lightning and people see what we do is phenomenal, then we'll get a deal. We're thinking that the Calvary will come in.
Right.
And the Calvary never comes. And it's like, okay, we made this great short film that is already an IP that CW and Warner Brothers own, and we can't do anything to capitalize off. We can't sell posters. We can't sell T-shirts. We can't make any money off of it. We can't monetize it on YouTube. So we're back at square one. We just did something that kind of fed our ego and showed everybody, yo, we're great filmmakers, but there was no next step. And so that's the danger. I warn people about that. Like, if you get into something, do something that you own the IP. Don't do anything where you can't market it and monetize off of it.
I'm glad you say that, because it's also getting very annoying on how you'll see some snobby film critics who, again, have no idea how the film process works, and they want to be a judge of everyone's character, to where it's just like, okay, but you're not being constructive. Oh, why can't I find a number for what their budget is? It's like, well, A, maybe they don't want you to know, and B, well, will it actually change your opinion of how the movie's professional quality or anything? It's like, it really is amazing. I've seen some people do some banged up jobs for like 5,000 overseas or what have you, and everyone just seems to act like, oh, if it's anything less than 10,000, 20,000 or 2 million, it's clearly a piece of shit. I'm like, that's, how can you think that way?
Well, because with the advent of technology, people can make, I did a short film. It won Octavia Spencer's Facebook Challenge. I did a short film.
Saw that listed there. What year was that?
It was back in 2000, probably almost 10 years ago. So what is this? This is
2022? So wow.
Yeah, 2012. And so we shot it on an iPhone. At that time, it was an iPhone 5, maybe 5S, which was unheard of. We went to the festival, we won and got $1,000, and I got my first DSLR camera that sent me on the path to learning how to work the camera, being a photographer, all of that stuff. And when I went to the festival, all these people had these red cameras that they shot on, Alexa cameras. They spent $50,000, and then they got to me and they said, well, how much was your budget? And I said, the cost of a bus fare for three people, four, because my friend Farley Jackson was a co-producer on it. And we just rode the bus back and forth, and we just used the iPhone. I put Filmic Pro on it and used the iPhone to shoot it.
I'm so glad you brought it. I used that a bunch of times, and yeah. I would get so many people giving me the ugly eye. And even though Soderbergh was popularizing stuff like that, they were like, oh, that's unprofessional. You're not using a camera. You're not using it in the DSLR. I'm like, then get off the set. My God.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the fear. That's the fear for people. I just had some friends of mine. They just shot a horror film on an iPhone. They said the footage looks phenomenal. I think it's all
about. You can't tell.
Yeah.
You cannot tell.
Yeah.
All you got to do is hire a sound guy and actors and set guys, and they just think, oh, how dare you?
Well, but that's the threat. You see, listen, I started becoming a DP on my own projects because I had problems with DP.
DPs
would tell me, we're not going to do what you're going to do. We're just going to do this here. We're going to put the light here and do this. And I was like, this is contrast to what I see with Steven Spielberg and a lot of the other top directors. They're helping to set up the shots. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I just need to let my DP set up the shots. And then when I would watch my stuff, I wasn't happy with it. And I said, well, listen, there's got to be a way. And with the advent of the cameras got easier to buy. And YouTube University is a place that I always encourage people to go. There's always some guy on there from, you know, anywhere across the world telling you how to do something. Film Riot, they made a career off of helping people make great content. Aperture, they sponsored me on Black Lightning. Ted Sim, a really good friend of mine. I was one of their first Patreons and started buying their lights. And started learning these things. And so to go back to kind of what you had said in the very beginning, your passion, if it's still there, man, you can do anything you want. You just got to tell a great story. And now with the new iPhones, it's even easier. And no one knows. It only becomes this great thing to do when Aronofsky decides he wants to make films on an iPhone. Now all of a sudden, oh, it's a great thing. I'm like, I did that with an iPhone 5S almost 10 years ago. I was ahead of the curve. I'm always ahead of the curve. And so for me, it's a thing of stop listening to those outer voices. Cut down on your inner voices. And the only voice you should have is the one that tells you, keep going.
That's a very good way to go about it. Don't wait for people to popularize it and act like, oh, I want to take all the credit for this.
Yeah, and trust me, they are watching. They're always watching. People are always watching you. Whether or not they want to help or whether or not they are envious, you can't do anything about that. You just,
yeah.
When you wake up, God gives you air to walk through the next day. What do you want to do with it? If you have a dream, follow that dream. I always tell my actors, we are dreaming a dream. You're chasing a dream or you're living a dream. A lot of people I know were chasing a dream and now they're living it. They're doing quite well in their careers. But it's like I said, it's that time thing. It's learning to deal with the suffering. COVID kicked me in the ass. It kicked a lot of people in the ass. You know, some people, it propelled them. It gave them more opportunity. I just happened to have a business where COVID wasn't a good thing for it. No one's going to go into an acting studio and scream in each other's faces and kiss each other and, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's not happening. It's one of those things. Even now, I see all these people having acting classes. I'm like, I don't think that's really smart. I know certain coaches who've only been online and they haven't left being online. They've been online since day one, since it started. I did the online thing for a little bit. And I just, my classes became college courses. It was 3 or 4 hours of a lot of knowledge that it would take me a day or two just to put the lesson together. And I said, I can't keep doing this.
So I'm putting it in a hands-on approach.
Yeah, I put it in a book. But I like the hands-on approach. And that's kind of why it was easy for me to direct, because I know how to work with actors. Meeting schedule, that's not hard at all. That's not hard at all. If you have a script and you have your shot list and you're good at editing, which is what's happening a lot. There's so many bad editors out there. There's a lot of bad mixers, bad everything.
I believe it. I worked on a music video a few years back. Again, not going to name names. But they got impatient with me, of all people. And I was just like, I need you to do it this way and that way. And you're holding up the client who needs to see some sample of this. And they were pretty much... at that point, they stopped treating me like a director and they were like, how would you be the messenger and tell him to basically fuck off? I'm like, for real?
Wow.
We got to show someone a sample, you know? And they didn't want to, they weren't, it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. There's like certain directors aren't people. Some editors and camera guys will just pretty much just have zero filter. And it just gets to the point where it's like, well, no wonder they vary by person or by review. It depends on what their mood was that day, and that's just not cool.
Yeah, it is. Hollywood, it's 90% personality. It really is. 10% is the talent. When you're dealing with the personalities, then you're dealing with different people who deal with money differently, they deal with people differently, they deal with the work differently. Everyone has different ways of walking on the set. Doesn't matter what their title is. And so once you get used to personality, then you're able to know exactly how you should work. I'm very easygoing. I'm like, I don't care what you do as long as it's better. And if what you do isn't better, I'm going to redo it. And right. James, he did that with us with the VFX on Black Lightning. There were things that James, Chase Baker and I did. And James would go in and just make it better. And he was like, I hope I don't offend you guys, but I kind of redid this. And we were like, no, we don't care as long as it looks good. And so you have that core group of people that you can work with like that sometimes. But then you have
trust.
You have people who are totally offended. I had a feature that I did and I had a composer on it, and the sound guy had put something in, the mixing, the sound mixer put something in post that kind of was better than what the composer did. That composer took what I did as the knife in their heart. And after that, they didn't even come to the screening. They took it so offensive. And it was like, I didn't do it to offend you. It's just that that piece was better. And so you're going to deal with all types
for such a minor thing. Come on.
It was everything. And I mean, never picked up the phone again. I had other jobs where it paid more than what they got paid on the first one. Never ever contacted back, no emails, nothing. It was just like, so, and I remember it was from that because I remember how they looked at me. And it was just like, because I was in between listening and I'm like, that does sound better. It was like, oh, it was the cardinal sin. And I learned a lesson from that. Don't ever be in the process where the sound mixer and the composer are in the same room.
No.
Don't do it. Because any changes that you make, if they can question it, they're going to have it against you personally.
Yeah. Definitely a good lesson to prevent. Is your martial arts school still going?
No. I closed my school when I moved to L.A. I worked for an R&B artist back in 97. And my school was the second largest school in Augusta, Georgia. I had been teaching at that time for about 7 years. Several black belts were under me. One of them who actually opened up his school here, and he has one of the biggest kickboxing schools in the area, and he's one of the biggest coaches in the world. So he's a black belt under me, and then Shantia Northfleet, who's a female, first black American female NASCAR driver, she's a black belt under me. And a lot of my other black belts have gone on to become amazing real estate people, lawyers, doctors. So I'm always very excited about that, with what I accomplished through that school. I don't have a desire to publicly teach anymore. I will do seminars from time to time, self-defense seminars, because it's a lot of work. You put a lot of energy into people in that time that you're teaching them. And I'm a very hands-on instructor. I strive for people to be better than me because I want them to defeat me. I train my students to defeat me. And so at 38 years, I lose track sometimes, but this month is 38 years of teaching martial arts, 20 years of learning self-defense, Bojuka self-defense system. And I shout out to my instructor, Tom Schrank. I don't have a desire to teach publicly as much, to be stuck in that, okay, three classes a day, this and that, that. I don't have a desire for that. I do teach privately. I have a couple of private students, some who are training for competition, some who just want to learn how to defend themselves and their job, because some cops and bail bondsmen and bailiffs, people who work in prisons and stuff. So what I teach is very practical and hands-on and pragmatic for them. So we train at least once a week. When I have a personal class of guys that we get together and we work the tactics and stuff. So, yeah.
Sweet. Wherever you can get a few extra gigs, as well as just have those, you know, loyal clients.
Oh, I'll be training martial arts to the day I die. I've always said that. I mean, I got into martial arts primarily because I got mugged and I was a victimized kid. So I had to know how to defend myself. The greatest gift this month, Ron Van Cleef, Shidoshi Ron Van Cleef, nominated me to be in his Hall of Fame. And that was a great honor. I'm sharing that with Art Camacho, my stunt teacher, and different people, Wesley Snipes, you know, that caliber, Steven Seagal. It's just like, oh, man, you know. My name's going to be up there. I thought I would be an unsung martial artist. And I was cool with that. I was like, you know, no one knows my name in the martial arts world. Even when I moved to L.A., I was very private about that. I taught in L.A. a lot, but I just didn't promote a lot of the fact that I was a martial artist. I always feel like you got to have an ace, you know, your ace card up sleeve. And martial arts, to me, it's kind of like that active Detroit shooter guy. I can't remember his name, but Dust guy, Detroit urban survival, and he shows those gun tactics. It's like, why are you doing that? Like, don't do that. Stop that. Don't do that. You know, it's like, you know, gun tactics are very serious, and you don't need for people to know that you know how to disarm guns. Like,
right.
So for me, it's my future of martial arts will be mostly private lessons. And if I'm offered a gigs or seminars and maybe contractual, I'll definitely do that stuff. I enjoy teaching people the self-defense and stuff.
Okay, sweet. Your upcoming project Cross, do you want to promote that?
Yeah, thank you for that. That's Cross. I was one of my executive producers in A New Light, the film that I'm working on getting distribution for. I shot that film during the pandemic, during a lockdown in LA in 2020. We shot that film where there was no filming happening, and we got it done, got it finished, and now we're just in the process of getting the distribution. So we have some interested parties, but you know, that's par for the course. We just got to make sure that somebody really locks into it and gives it a great home. But Cross, one of the executive producers, Roger Cross, funny as it is, came on board
became the actor, a part of Roger Cross.
No. He's an executive producer. He's a producer director, and he came on board, and he became an executive producer of A New Light, and then he asked me to co-direct with him on Cross, and so we're in the process of getting the script done. And completed Alex Miller, who wrote the short Henry's Courage about Henry Johnson, came on board to write that. So it's like you always work with the same people who are very reliable. Alex is an amazing writer, and he's been doing the final touches to get the final draft across. They did a table read, and there were some things that need to be worked on. So if Roger's listening to this, he knows I'm very grateful to him because he's always extending work opportunities to me. He'll be in a chair, but I'll be over his shoulder just giving him advice and guiding him and helping him to not have the same mistakes that I had happen to him. It's an action film about three sisters, and one gets kidnapped, and the other two sisters have to go save her. So it's going to be really, really good. It's probably going to be shot in Vegas or Arizona, depending on the tax credit. So, yeah. And that's going to be in the fall. We were looking to do the spring, but COVID is still lingering here and everywhere else. So we're like, okay, let's just get everybody ready. And then hopefully by that time, it'll be an easy thing to move and make happen.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this has been very swell. Just get inside the mind of just another hard worker. It's just not letting anyone else dictate his career.
No, not at all. I've been like that since I was a kid. Even with the martial arts, people are like, you got to train one thing. And I'm like, nah, that don't work for me. I'm the type of person where I studied with Ed Osano for a brief moment, just a brief moment. Several of his seminars I attended. One of the greatest martial art instructors ever, that ever lived, Daniel Inosano, Bruce Lee student. And one of the things that he said that I never forget, he said, you guys at that time, it was years ago, it was probably about 10 years ago as well. He said, you guys are at the cutting edge. He said, there's so much information out there about the martial arts in general. Everything you need to learn, you can learn. And if you know anything about Danny Inosano, he was the type where he would go and take the white belt and just jump into a new class and start training with this person, training with that person. He was just always a big cup that he wanted more information to sponge. And I never forgot that. And so for many, many years, I studied with a lot of different people from different systems and learned things. Now, primarily my driving system is Bojuka self-defense. But I still, to this day, I train some Wing Chun, I train some collies, some sticks, and I go hang out with the dog brothers. I mean, I do a lot of different things, and people come to me and want specifically a certain thing. I'll teach that. But I believe that you have to be on a constant search for yourself and to thine own self be true, which learn everything about yourself. Thereby, you'll be better at everything that you do.
By all means. Any other additional words of advice? Just
Yeah, man. To everybody that's listening to this, just keep going. I mean, like I said, COVID opened up a lot of our eyes. If you're alive and you're well and you're healthy, you're better off than those who left us and those who are struggling and dealing with the pain of what's going on in the world. But when it comes to your dreams, any dream, I remember telling myself in elementary school that I was going to own a martial arts school. I did that. I told myself many, many years ago that I was going to be on a Wheel of Fortune. I did that. So,
oh, sweet.
I won $13,653. I'll never forget it. but my point is this. Just keep going. Just keep going. You'll be shocked. Life is about moments and memories. That's it. So if you keep going, you can be the one to dictate whether those moments and memories are going to be good. Mm-hmm. That's it.
By all means.
Yeah.
Well, and Godspeed to you. This was light.
Thank you. Godspeed to you too, brother. I appreciate it. I look forward to maybe talking down the road again on something else once I've accumulated a little bit more stuff going on.
I'll have you back. Yeah. Anything you want to just talk about, any topic?
Absolutely. I appreciate you.
We'll return after these messages.
JURRS Podcast is proud to promote AutoCorrect, an independent film company with experienced industry professionals who can serve all your film industry needs. They include self-tapes, voice actor recordings, demo reel editing, script revisions, headshots, and much more. They're Actor Correct at your request. Book them on Instagram.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, Prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely
at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How
did
you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Kuber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a cup of brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Bana, 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 meow.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. Where the one last plot holes are gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a jacked up.